Never get tired of that song. How are you, John?
I'm good, thank you, Ollie. That jingle is that's going down in history. Yep. I do love it.
We're writing it in it. One day at a time. So exactly. Welcome, folks, to another episode of Problem Busters. And before we kick off, just like to tell you a little story. So a few months back, I was walking down the street in Hove near Brighton in the south of England. And we walked past we smelled it first, actually. There was the smell of fresh bread. And I was like, oh, artisanal bread, amazing. That doesn't usually happen in the middle of the high street. And there was a stall there with a couple of people who were selling like a really good range of like pastries and like proper bread. You know, the kind of bread that you get when you go and visit a family member and they've made something special. And they were called Breadwinners. And I looked them up and got a bit of background on it, and I realized that this was an organization with a really great ethos and a really great story. Now, luckily, we've got Martin Kozorinski-Campos with us today, who knows a bit about it. So I hope I said your name right, and welcome to the show, Martin.
Thank you, Ollie. Hi, John. Yeah, well done with my name. It's very complicated. And yeah, thank you for passing by through our stall. That's great. I hope you get, what did you get? Do you remember what you get?
I wanted to get the delicious looking naughty sort of pastry croissant. And what I actually got was a rye sourdough kind of loaf, and it was delicious.
Very healthy option. Well done. Well done for you.
So you were involved in the founding and running of Breadwinners. Am I correct?
So I actually came 1 year after it was founded. It was founded by our chairman and a very impressive lady called Marika. And after a year of trying a model which was to support refugees with delivery of bread using bicycles, then that model didn't really work as they expected, and they started thinking about markets, and then I got involved and I continued the organization at the very beginning, 2017, as a one-man band, and we have one market in Victoria Park in London, and we were supporting two refugees from Syria, and that was the trial, let's say the pilot, and what I really liked about that model and why we sort of stopped the bicycle model and moved into the market is that the community, the aspect of having other traders and regular customers is a great community for supporting and welcoming young refugees in particular. We also had the option to, support them with mentors on the stall. And the fact that they were exploring much more skills than if you are only delivering bread. I think, any jobs, even delivery or any jobs at the very beginning, is super important to do something. And maybe some people will, maybe if you were unemployed for a period of time or during coronavirus, you will see how much that has an effect on you, on your mental health. And so I would, say that any job is better than no job. But through the markets, it's the environment is really good. There's welcoming people. You get to know lots of other people, and we can support them with a mentor that is on the stall, and they can develop further skills on customer service, marketing, finance, and other skills that they can take on to continue their journeys in the UK.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you. And I kind of led you straight into the guts of it there. So maybe we just take a step back. What is the one sentence that you use to describe Breadwinners when someone asks you at a dinner party?
So, I think you mentioned it a little bit. We have a tagline that is fresh bread and fresh start. And that would mean that we sell fresh bread. And because we are able to sell fresh bread, we can give the first jobs in the UK and first work experience to young refugees and people seeking asylum in the UK.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, cool. And we'll definitely come back to this in a moment, but we usually now kick into a little bit about you and the background that that you have that brought you to here. So we have to start with your really interesting name. So what does that tell us about your cultural influences in your family?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I'm Argentinian, but I have one side is Spanish. My grandfather came from Spain when he was 4 years old to Argentina. And from the other side, my great-grandparents are from Ukraine and the region that is Ukraine now. So I have quite a bit of migrant backgrounds. And then I came to Spain and then to the UK. So I'm not a refugee, just in case people might think that, because I'm working in this space. But I'm very passionate about the struggles that young refugees go through, and especially starting in a new country. I think, you know, lots of people can't relate to that. If you ever lived abroad or if you moved cities, etc., you know, starting your way can be quite challenging. And if you add to that language complication, but also not having a network and, you know, probably coming through very difficult journeys and still having in your mind what's happening back in your country. If you're a refugee, probably you're, you know, there's many reasons why people come here, but ultimately they cannot go back, or their life is a danger if they would go back. Yeah, you can think how challenging it is to start already in any environment, but even if it is a hostile environment, or if it is actually designed to make it even worse, then that's even really, really complicated. But not everything is grim, because there are people like you guys that will come through the stall, would like what we do, will have a nice conversation with the people at the stall, and that's where change can happen, at least in a one-to-one and a direct personal relationship level. That's what, at the moment, we're really focused on making that change to the young people that we can support and that come through us.
Awesome. And just to add a little bit more to your background, what sort of work did you do when you first came to Europe and before coming to Breadwinners?
So I am an industrial engineer. I studied back in Buenos Aires, in the University of Buenos Aires. But when I came to Europe, it was very hard, even in Spain and in the UK, to get an engineering job, even if I was already working back home. So I did all type of work, hospitality, waitering. And that allowed me actually to survive and even, you know, to live, even to go on holidays, which, you know, back home, if you are in the hospitality sector, you're probably not going to be able to go on holidays. But in Europe, if you are in the hospitality sector, you can go on holidays. Let's say you can afford to do that. And later that led me to finding jobs in the corporate sector, both in Spain and also in the UK. When I came to the UK, I met lots of people that were doing things that they were really passionate. And I think I was good at what I was doing. I was in supply chain, but I was not really passionate about it. So it did make me think a little bit more. And I had the time to volunteer. So I started volunteering with a very grassroots organization in Croydon, in the south of London, with lots of young refugees. And we were doing, you know, welcoming them and doing activities like theater or sports. I'm a very keen sport person. We were doing football, capoeira, dancing, a lot of fun stuff. And I really, really enjoyed, and I met wonderful people and really inspirational young people, to the level that I thought, okay, I want to really focus on this. I sort of also could relate to that, being new in a country, and I could see that we were forming something quite unique. But I also was very aware that, you know, projects like Form Community are very important, but then I could tell that it was very difficult for these young people to then go a step ahead and start thinking about work or living independently and standing by themselves. Most of those young people that I was encountering or was starting to meet and to, you know, form long-lasting friendships were unaccompanied minors. And yeah, it was very difficult. They have amazing dreams or, you know, very good and, you know, clear ambitions, but very not knowing how to go about it and probably not even seeing it possible. And so I think that in a way then, in a way, led me to Breadwinners, I think, because in Breadwinners we have a very clear way to support them in that first ever step or job. And sometimes I will ask you guys if you are up for replying some questions. I would like to ask you, what was your first ever job? The first time you ever got paid for doing something. You remember that?
Me? Let's see. How long ago was that? I think it may have been... Oof. I remember. If it wasn't from family, because my dad used to pay me to wash the car and do the garden.
Exactly. That's it. That's probably vacuum, yeah. That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope you did a good wash. And you, Ollie?
So I think for me, I did get a tiny amount of pocket money when I was a kid each week, but in the cents or in the pence, to use English terms. I think my first job was a day of work experience, which was probably just a few hours, but it felt like a day to like a 11-year-old at Mr. and Mrs. Patel's Superette, which was a corner shop or an off-license, as we would call it here. And I could still remember him saying, "Oliver, you always take the milk from the back of the row because that's the freshest milk."
Interesting. Yes, you know, I do ask this question a lot. I think the vast majority of the chances is that it was either, you know, some relation from your uncle, your father, your somebody on the family, or, you know, a close network, or, you know, your corner shop or the club you used to go or the restaurant that you used to go. And in any case, it would have involved at least knowing the language, most probably knowing already that having a network connection, probably being able to write a CV and being able to have the confidence to actually go to a place and ask for a job. So those things are things that are quite complicated especially for young people that arrive in the UK, that go through the asylum process, which is really tough and really bad for your mental health. So because I think Breadwinners, what we found is that once you give that opportunity and once you break that, you know, first challenging job, then things get slightly better, basically, and easier. There's a massive well-being boost that the young people get through our programs. We, you know, we ask them before and after our programs, and their confidence and their well-being goes significantly up because they are using the skills. So maybe they already have amazing skills and they manage to use it rather than staying at home and not doing much. They actually use their skills. They learn new skills and they can see that they're doing something productive. They also know our mission, which is to support refugees. So, you know, every time that they are selling bread, they are also supporting that mission. And in our model, we have three programs where young people progress through the program. So young people that have progressed are then supporting young people that are starting the program. So they also see that sort of getting behind the mission and being proud of working for Breadwinners.
What is the asylum process, just at a very high level? Because I think a lot of people probably don't know. I've done a little bit of work with asylum seekers also, and there were a lot of things that I had to learn about the journey they'd gone on. So do you mind just giving a summary for folks who haven't come across it?
Yeah, maybe it might be that you are more of an expert. I'll give you my experience of working with young people that go through that process. So young people will arrive to the UK. It is very hard to arrive to the UK if you want to claim asylum. There's very or no, almost or very little routes for legally to do that. So I guess the right now the Ukrainian and the Hong Kong might have some good level of or not access or to come legally. Some people come through family reunion, you know, and that, those, you know, the people that come here legally, I would say that they're really, really, I would say even lucky ones. But if you are really, really a danger at your home country due to religious or sexual orientation or war or anything that, that might be happening, people are really desperate. And they would come to the UK because they already have some understanding of the language, because they might have some networks already in the UK, and that makes a massive difference compared to arriving to a country where there's absolutely nothing or no one, that you don't understand not even one word of the language. And when they come here, they will make their asylum claim. The Home Office is then responsible for giving the very basics. So they will give, I think right now it's something like £7 per day, which is something, but quite little. So, you know, you struggle to move around, to take transport or to eat, you know, it was just the bare minimum to survive, I would say. And they will get, if you know, if they're lucky, they might get fostered on a family, and if not, they would get shared accommodation in different degrees. But it is well known that the housing provision is quite bad and very bad, and the food provision is really bad. And then that process of claiming asylum, finding a solicitor, starting to get known for with other charities that sort of try to cover the gaps of the system, then that can last some significant time. From, you know, we work with some young people that are still waiting, and it's been more than 3 or 4 years. And then right now there's a very challenging situation, which was already challenging before, but when you receive your, you know, after going through all the process, explaining why your life is a danger, reliving that experience, which is really traumatic. So you really need to go back to all the terrible things that might have happened to you back home and during the journey, which is obviously not nice. And then many people are age challenged. Then, you know, in the positive cases, which in my work, almost everyone that, you know, we is claiming asylum gets the refugee status ultimately. So it takes lots of years and it's a very terrible process, but then they get the refugee status, which means that they were entitled to be here and they were always, you know, the whole process could have been faster and easier. At that point, they get the right to work for the first time. So before they didn't have the right to work, which means that they are a less class of a human being if you don't have the same rights as the rest of the people. And nowadays they get an eviction letter. You know, congratulations, you have your refugee status, but at the same time you need to leave this hostel or this shared accommodation. And sometimes that, you know, in the past it used to happen within 28 days, and now it's happening with a much shorter lead time. And you can imagine that if you didn't, you know, you haven't been able to work, so not many young people get access to things like breadwinners. And we actually support a very small number of young people compared to the number of young people in the whole of the UK. You know, you have no experience, no curriculum, no nothing. You are suddenly made homeless. The council should support you, but if you are a young male person, you don't have a priority, and you know, we all know that housing situation in the UK is not great. So lots of people, even now in 2024, are really going into the streets. And then it's really hard to find a job, and things can go downhill very fast from that. But there are lots of amazing projects, not only Breadwinners, lots of other really great projects that, you know, the grassroots charity sector tries their best to support people through all those gaps in the system. And, you know, we are like sort of juggling with all the people that fall through the cracks of what could be a good and human system, let's say, of welcoming people that really deserve a place to live and to be part of a community. And not only that, but they can contribute. So that this is, I think, quite an essential part of it, is that at least in, you know, in Brighton and London, you can see the diversity of people, and you can see how, you know, there are many jobs to be done, and there are many skilled people that can fill those jobs. And if you don't have the skill yet, something that you can tell from, especially from young refugees, is their will to learn and their tenacity to learn and develop. So that's probably my experience.
Thank you.
Yeah, you touched on a few interesting points. I think one of them was in terms of the right to work, because I think that is probably one of the most difficult things. I haven't personally worked with any asylum seekers, but I have worked with a lot of immigrants. And I think the situation that they end up in at sometimes is when they're waiting for a decision, they can't actually work, right? And oftentimes, if you're a certain age or in a certain demographic, the government will not give you any money either. So you're kind of stuck in limbo. And then you're kind of left in a position where you need to rely on that community. So in terms of the Breadwinners and that sense of community and building and kind of building that up, what is one of the kind of barriers that you see young refugees kind of run into when they try and kind of integrate into a community but don't necessarily have the skills? What's one of the key points that Breadwinners can kind of help them develop?
Yeah, so we have a specific program, which is the first. We have three programs, and the first one is called Risers Program, which was the one that Oli was mentioning. Probably he might have met some young people in the market. So that is a 2-month program that involves us, all our programs. It involves work experience, training, and mentoring. So we like doing things on three. We have three programs and three ingredients for each program, which is work experience, training, and mentoring. And so the young people that are quite new to the country, they already have covered their basic needs, which I would say like housing, they would be already accommodating in housing. But housing is something that can go and be, you know, can disappear basically. But at least for being able to come to the Rights Program, they need to be already in housing. They need to have some contact with some other charity or caseworker or solicitor, somebody else that is supporting them through their legal through the legal system. And then they will apply. We will do a very because we are a small organization, we can be really friendly in a sense that we do things. We try to always keep doing energizers or fun activities. And even, you know, in our interview process, we are going to be checking if they have a minimum level of English where we can exchange WhatsApps and people will understand where things are happening and when do they need to come. And if they understand that the program has a 2-month period and they need to come to a market, they understand what is a market. So as long as they do understand that, then they are welcome to come to our first session, where we will have a fun environment, we'll play some games, and start to basically teach them how to sell bread on the stalls. And then we pair them up with a mentor that's going to be with them on the stall to try to bridge that gap with a customer and show them, but also learn with them how to sell bread and support each other so that they're never alone and they feel supported. And we, yeah, that, that would be the first program. Then we do opportunities fairs where they will find other volunteering opportunities in Brighton or in London. And eventually when we keep in contact with them and when they get back, when they get their refugee status, they can come back and do the first job with us on the second program. But I think in terms of barriers, so we are oversubscribed. So we have, we unfortunately, we have more young people, you know, registering their interest to run the program that we can take. And that's why we also always try to make sure that the young people that are doing the program, they fully understand the program so that we have a lesser rate of dropouts. And we have a very small rate of dropouts that is less than 5%, because we want to make sure if somebody starts the program, we pair them up, we assign it to a mentor, that they fully understand the program so that they can continue throughout all the program.
And as you said before, refugees, yeah, and just migrants in general, right? As a someone who's migrated twice in my life between countries, I don't know if there are hungrier people, because we know that if we don't work, we don't eat. They're just, in my experience, just such trustworthy, hard-working, eager people, you know, deserving people.
Correct. Yeah, I can totally share that same experience with working with over 500 program participants that have been through our programs.
And what about the back office side? Because I think there's also programs that relate to the baking and the making. Is that right?
Yeah, so this so we partner with artisan organic bakers. So we tried and to bring young people to the bakery. We, you know, we show them the bakery, but you know, to become a baker, you first of all, you know, young people have lots of ambitions on becoming doctors or lawyers or even plumbers and electricians. But a baker is a type of job that you do overnight that will probably not allow you to go to college or study because you are doing a night shift. So it's very specific, and normally bakers work overnight on a bakery, and they are focused on a very manual task, which can be really rewarding for some people, but also quite isolating if you are very new to the country. So we, especially the, you know, we know that being facing customers is the best way to support them with transferable skills that will help them to go to lots of other career opportunities or different paths. While baking is for people that want to bake almost all their life, because they're going to go into it, they're going to learn that skill. It's a very particular skill, and it will, you know, define you if you want to really, really learn the craft. So all our programs are on the customer facing. And now the latest program, which I feel is quite interesting, that was born from coronavirus, is actually selling bread online. So working with a laptop and doing calls to customers, to restaurants, cafes, or corporates that might want to sort artisan organic bread. And so we train them on IT skills and customer service skills online, which are quite different to face-to-face. And the young people would be taking the calls and making the orders to a bakery and arranging the logistics. And so that's the third program, yeah. So it's called the Proofers program. We always put a bread pan. Young people can go from, you know, seeking asylum, doing your first work experience in the RISES program, then getting your right to work, coming back and being a market store manager, supporting the young people that are risers, and after 6 months, moving on to other jobs or continuing inside Breadwinners to the next program, which is the Proofers program, and becoming a sales representative, having your first laptop, sending your first work emails, using Excel for the first time probably, and doing calls from home or from our office.
Yeah, that is genius. As a person who's managed a lot of customer-facing teams online, it's actually amazing how quickly
really hard. It's a very hard job. Yeah, also cold calling, which means that they will call, 100 customers, and maybe they will have 5 people that say yes, but a lot of no, compared to being on the market, and almost every person that will come to the stall would, because they want to buy bread, they will buy bread. You know? But they call it, and there's lots of very interesting conversations. I think if we could make a podcast of all the funny conversations that are in that, it would be super funny.
No, it would be amazing if we could get someone with some stories as well, some people to share their stories.
I think you should definitely talk to one of our.
It is amazing, and you get you start to learn skills as okay. How do I talk to different types of people? How do I actually be engaging really quickly? It's really quite it's hard because you can't see anybody. You can't see any sort of micro kind of emotions or anything. And, you're just maneuvering over a voice conversation or a text conversation. But it's really amazing.
It is super hard. And I think I feel like these 3 programs, take them from the first one is, the first time that you ever hand something to somebody else in exchange, for payment. I think, you did it maybe with washing a car or on the corner shop, but that first time, I remember being scared first time, but then you do it and then you get used to it. Then you actually need to be responsible for the market. So even the setup, the equipment, make the presentation, learn absolutely all the name of the bread that we have all, over 30 breads on any given stall, really knowing your products and have a level of responsibility with the other young people that come in. So you need to sort of lead on that. And then once you go into a proofer program, you have to start almost from zero because you need to learn to use the computer and talk on the phone. That for some people is easy, but for some other people is much more challenging than talking face to face.
And hearing you talk about it makes me realize that there are things that we take for granted, being in a place and starting in a place, that others just need to learn, right? Like the ability to send an email and use a laptop and how to book an appointment into a calendar and all of those things, right?
It seems you do it almost automatically. And exactly. Imagine that you need to do that, first of all, if you haven't had a computer ever in your life, probably. You might be good at with your phone, but it's quite significantly different to it in the computer. And then if you're doing it in a language that you just are bearing to learn, starting to learn, that is quite a challenge.
I think I remember when I was younger, when we moved to France, it's just really simple things. Just saying hello, because I was pretty young. I was a child, but all of the training I got, the flashcards, hello, how do you do? Can I play? It was so tough because that barrier is just like almost a mental barrier. That if you're saying okay, if I say hello, what if they say something back? Then what do I say? How do I? And it's really so. Sometimes you'd be like hello, and they'll say okay, hello, and you'd be like so you'd freeze. So yeah, we take a lot of it for granted.
And I think in this last program, the one of the IT, especially during coronavirus when we were all locked down, and I remember, maybe we would have sent a laptop to a young person or to a few young people and doing a online workshop and, trying to navigate people through the email and no, go up. No, no, a bit more to the right or to the left. The patience that we need to exercise. So copy paste was like almost impossible, you know. But then once you get it, it's done, and then it seems silly, but it does make quite a bit of a difference.
Yeah, but and also on the other end, once they acquire the skills, so they're actually really proficient and happy. Like, okay, that's down. What next? What next? It's always
learning curve is quite fast and very exciting in a way, but it does demand a lot of, you know. We have program managers and the in Breadwinners, so the core team. It does demand a lot of work and a lot of patience and a lot of support. A lot of, it's quite funny as well. The whole process can be very, very funny in the markets or at any moment. And I think that our experience is that we do have a lot of fun, and it's highly positive to work with young people, with the young people that we get to meet. You get a sense of meeting people that are really inspirational and they are really fun, and they can, you know, bring a lot to any workplace, because you will be up. It's very difficult. You will be 100% uplifted by working with this type of young people.
Yeah, awesome. Would you be able to tell us, because I think you touched on it briefly, a bit about the mentors? Kind of what are they like? And
it could be somebody like Oli. Oli would be the perfect target for a mentor. It could be someone that comes to our market, and they, you know, in our markets, we don't put the in big letters refugees here or something like that, because we want people to not to be labeled like that. We do train them to, if they feel comfortable, to explain our mission and tell. So it's up to the person on the stall to share our mission in the way that they feel best. And so people will get to learn what we do, either on the market, word of mouth is a big one, and or on our website. Lots of people can find us on our website. And anyone that's been in the UK for at least a little bit more than a year, I think, and if you are already working in the UK and you feel like you are established or you have a network of friends and you already have a job, I would say those could be things that we look into mentors. And also if you are genuinely motivated to support young refugees, then we train you to be an efficient and a good mentor to young people. And most of the time that means having the commitment to be there for them on the days that you arrange. You know, you have to be on the market at the right time, regardless of the young person sometimes struggling to find the place. So you support them through the program first, support them to sell bread and to be comfortable and being a welcoming person to that young person. And then when you develop trust, then you start doing a bit more of what we call it being an efficient mentor, which is working on what things the young person wants to develop. And we have a specific tool that we call the Outcome Stars, where we look into five things, including well-being, your role in the community, your communications, your hope and dreams, and your work and training. And so with that tool, you would support your mentee to develop from wherever they are to wherever they want to go. And a lot of time is building their confidence, showing them the options that are there for them, doing a bit of research. If somebody wants to be a plumber, do you know any plumber? If somebody wants to be a doctor, do you know any doctor you can introduce them? Or are you, you know, how do you access training, or how do you go into work? And showing them that, you know, even if they don't have the right to work yet, that they can do things to prepare themselves, and that once they have the right to work, that they can pursue their dream career in the UK. So I will invite anyone that is listening to this, if you have at least 2 hours on the weekend free and you would like to support a young person through our programs, you can check our website and and apply. And we will support you to be a good mentor for that young person.
Awesome. We will definitely include that in the show notes.
Yeah. And I think it's a lot more accessible. Thinking of it, I had no idea that, because I live near Beckenham Place Park. So every Sunday, so I used to go with my wife and our kids. We would just go for a walk in the park and we'd get bread. So we had the olive, the one with olives in it. I'm not really good
at it.
Yeah, yeah. So we always used to get it. It was just so tasty. So every Sunday we'd be going, we'd be walking. I'm like, oh, get a bit of bread. It's actually surprising how accessible. So it's always we'll have it in the show notes, always reach out. It was really tasty. So
yeah, Beckenham, I love that part because it has like a water section, and there's another project, also really cool project working there in there. So sometimes I will go to the market and then go to the activities of the other charities in the water.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Tell us a bit more about the preparing to look for work, because my background in terms of working with refugees is helping people find work, and my role at a particular charity in Australia called Keringle was to help people, put them in the car, go and take them to McDonald's or to the factory or to the business that they could have a job interview with, and support them through that process. But you know what I found is that most of them needed a lot of work before they were ready for that. So do you want to just talk about that a little bit?
Yes. I think the fact that I would say that our main or the uniqueness of Redwinners is that we are already giving them work experience and or paid work. So that can significantly then change their confidence and their CVs and their chances to get a job, because they have done already work experience in the UK, so that they can prove that on their CV, but also they will have built their confidence. But then we have trainings that are specifically aiming to navigate a job interview. So we will, you know, support them to understand what a job interview is about and the typical questions, and then practice with other mentors. So we do like some sort of speed, like if it was a speed dating, but a speed job interviews with lots of people. So then you get to practice. And ultimately, as anything, is something that you learn by doing. So you probably, the first few interviews are going to be not great, and then a little bit better. And after doing plenty of interviews, you get better. So we explain that to them as well, that job interviews is a bit of it's like going to a gym. You need to do more and then you become a bit better. And then what is very important, and that's why one of the reasons why we use mentors, is that as Breadwinner, we have a small, very lean organization, but also a small team. So it's very difficult for us to be able to support everyone individually. So that's why we have the mentors that are supporting them individually with their specific needs. And, you know, we work with young people that, as I was saying, they have very different ambitions and very different career paths. So then we rely on the mentors to support them and be that sort of help, where you even go with them to, you know, walk with them to the door of the first interviews. That's the role of the mentor, really. And we encourage that to happen, basically, and for the mentors to open the door with networks and with applying for jobs, but also to support them through that either interview process and also first few days of starting in a job in a new country.
Yeah, and part of that, of course, is the resume and helping them put a CV together as well, isn't it? Because it's funny, you know, as you were talking about the things that you help the participants with, I realize that these are the things that parents or aunts and uncles or teachers or friends would normally help us with, right? So exactly. And if we apply it to the software business, that John and I have both worked in for a long time. It's the buddy system, right? And yes, we are social animals, aren't we? We need to learn from each other.
Yes, so the mentors actually play that role of support and buddies, or that we call the mentors. And that's the exact role. I think, young people will, as soon as they arrive to the UK, they will get friends. They will get friends from their own country, their own culture. Then there's a challenge to get friends from, from the UK, or broaden their networks, but also to get access to older people that maybe you wouldn't straight away know or establish a relationship or a bond with somebody that is significantly older than you, but those persons have already done the first job, they've done plenty of jobs, plenty of interviews, plenty of networks. And if you don't have a family and you don't have that older people relationship, then you're losing a lot on that. And that's what the mentors, you automatically can do if you've been in the UK around for a bit of time, and you can support a 17, 18-year-old new arrival with your networks and your knowledge and already being through interviews and already have worked in different sectors or in different ways.
Yeah, I think that's key and amazing. And I think one of the key parts is who would know you better in terms of how you are professionally for your CV than somebody who's been working with you and is experienced, right? So I think that's one key. I mean, personally, my benefit is I used to work with Ollie as well, and he actually provided me with a lot of kind of advice and which direction and things like that. So I can definitely see the value in that. So I think this probably leads us to our next section. This is
Jonathan's
the question.
Favorite.
Yes, my favorite. This is one of the larger questions that we like to ask. And it's a big question. So it is, what is the thing you'd like to most change in the world?
Oh, this. Yeah, every day you wake up and, you see the news and can be super challenging, but also then you get to go around and meet amazing people. I think to change the world, I would love people I always think that people that are really doing bad things in the world probably are because they've been through something very bad. So I would love for people not to experience that initial really bad thing that triggers them into doing terrible things. You see what the context that we are right now. I think more empathy and more welcoming and more friendship can be really important thing nowadays. So I would like a world that is more empathetic and that can understand and put themselves in the shoes of other people.
Powerful, very powerful. Thank you for sharing that. It just leads me to the saying where hurt people hurt people, right? But in your it's hurt people would want to help people, you see, rather than how would people get in touch with you and the organization? How would our listeners?
I think our website or our social media. So in social media, is We Are Breadwinners, either Instagram or all of the above. And our website is www.breadwinners.org.uk. And there you can have all the information. If you are a young person from refugee background and looking for having work experience, or if you are a potential mentor or you want to volunteer with us, the website is the first place. It's very easy to fill a really quick form, and then we come back to you to tell you when we have availability to get you in.
Thank you.
Awesome.
I have one question that I've been dying to ask you, Matt. What would you say to someone who's thinking about putting an organization together to do something good? And they've never done this sort of thing before.
I will tell them that it will change their life dramatically. It's a really tough thing to do. It's super tough. But I think you do need the best recommendation is to surround yourself by people that are going to support you through that journey. You can have mentors or coach or, you know, there's lots of organizations, luckily in the UK, that do support social enterprises or charities and grassroots levels. So the UK, I would say, is a good place to start your project. But you're going to need family, friends, and a big support network to pull it through.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a big thing, but it's also a really important thing, isn't it? And every little bit helps, doesn't it? And I remember one of the amazing caseworkers I used to work with in Australia, Sol. She said, if you get nervous when you're thinking about doing something, it just shows that you care. I always like that. Martin, thank you for being on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I think we might have some plans to have some folks come on subsequently who've been through the program and can tell us a bit more about it, which would be awesome. And wishing you all the best with the team and the new program in terms of the proofers.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you for having us. Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning in, folks. Remember to subscribe. And if you liked it, hit like. We'll see you next time. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
And he gets the end of the song, and then he gets the beginning of the song. Yes. And we'll see you next time, folks. Thank you.